Vic, do me a favor. You must remind me if Simon doesn't show. I have to let him know there's no school next week.
Sunday
and Monday.
Oh, wow.
You don't know. They're closing. Jerusalem's going to be sterilized at 10 a.m. Sunday morning. That's all I could get out of the police. They won't.
I should go to Tzvat
next week. Go to Tzvat. And tomorrow, I'm relating.
Go to Meiron,
Tzvat, same thing. I'm relating to your critique tomorrow morning.
What
can I do? You're putting me into an area I never want to be in, but I have to be honest.
Okay, you got it.
All right, let us begin. We have a wonderful audience. The class before only had four students, so if we pick up one more person, we're doing okay. Today is Lag BaOmer. It's Sunday, May 14th, 2017. I want to say hello to the students in front of me, to the guests, who are not really guests because they're virtual students, and to all those listening across the world. Before I begin, there's a number of points I want to make and react to correspondence. Number one, I dedicated last week's year to Josh Huffman, and my Talmud Eli Lazupski from Chicago informed me that I spoke about Josh Huffman being a Talmud of the Rav, and then Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Eli informs me that he already was a Talmud of Rav Aaron Soloveitchik since the late 60s or early 70s in Chicago. I only know Josh Huffman from when he was a Talmud of the Rav, because when I did my research, as I mentioned last week, he was of help to me. So I want to say that Rav Aaron was like a sandwich. Rav Aaron on one side, the Rav in the middle, and Rav Aaron on the top side. I want to thank my student Rabbi Grinstein, who sent me a whole article here where I don't know if I'm being quoted word by word, but it's exactly what I say in class, and it makes me very happy to know that others think the way I do. Baruch Hashem. I heard that from the Rav. I write about it in the Rav. If you find two people thinking the same way, it's a good sign. So here's a whole article criticizing Rabbi Riskin that he wants to solve the problem of Agunah when the man won't give the get by Hafkad Kedushin, which I can't repeat my shurim now. I have over a year's worth of shurim. I'm writing them up now. First draft has been written. I'm working on bringing it up to my... the level I want, but it'll be published by Esrat Hashem. Target date is a year from now to come out with Rakafet Aaron Chelik Dalit. So here he criticizes Riskin, but he says, "You want to ask me what to do? Couldn't believe my eyes. Beat the hell out of the guy who doesn't want to give a get." And he calls, I said this last week, it's like, Kofan Otoad Shomer Rotsani. So remember what I told you last week. So I'm happy to see others agree with me. But what can we do? We live in a world of liberalism. What, you're going to beat the guy up? You're going to throw him? You take away his civil rights? Terrible, terrible. Yeah, but the guy is torturing a lady. He's killing a human being. My dear Talmud Josh Schneider, when I quoted Joseph Burg about the Yom Kippur War, and I said that never was so much owed by so many to so few. So I trust I didn't say Berg invented it. Churchill did. Yeah, but so I got a whole release on Churchill and when he said it originally, Kanaim Hara. This I'll relate to in class in one moment. And then I spoke about the reading of the Torah at night. Where do we have a source for it? So again, Rabbi Grinstein, he's a very important rabbi. I don't think, I call him student, doesn't mean he's a man of, he heads up the program for training rabbis to go Chutz Laretz, they hope for 3 to 5 years, and then come back to Israel. And they provide rabbis where no one wants to tread. In other words, Chabad will go all over. But there's certain shuls where they don't want a Chabad rabbi. They want somewhat they consider mainstream. And Rabbi Grinstein heads up that program very, very capably. So he shows me that. I remember I said, how do you read the Torah at night? And how do you say Hallel at Hallel on Pesach night? Hallel is the open Mishnah. It's part of Shacharit. So he showed me in Masechet Sofrim, there's a reading that you do say at night. But and then when I said about reading the Torah, Simchas Torah night, so he showed me sources that claim the Rav read Simchas Torah night. So I just want to say, I'm aware of most of these sources, but halacha lemaisa, when I tried to find out what the Rav did in Maimonides, I got three different opinions. Regardless of what Rabbi Schechter wrote and Rabbi Kopin, one opinion was he didn't read, like the Gaon. Second opinion was he did read. A third opinion, which probably is the most reliable, was since they were reading when he got to, when he came to Boston, he had enough fights over Birchat Kohanim when Yantar fell on Shabbat. He didn't want to make an issue out of Simchas Torah, so he let them read. It was a B'diavet. What's more interesting, when I tried to check out about reading the Torah in Yerushalayim, Minhag Agra, I wound up with two directly opposite stories. The Gra did read, the Gra didn't read. It's just amazing how, you're not talking ancient history. The Rav, we're talking about Rabbi Reuben, grew up in Boston. Rabbi Reuben, did the Rav read the Torah, Simchas Torah night? Remember what you that's what you answered us, okay. So it's amazing. So I want to say, I recognize there are many sources, but my own research, I wound up dead-ended. Now, this is important. I got a number of emails, and they wanted me to explain. I couldn't put into writing, it would take too much, but I'll say it very quickly, that on one hand, Aaron Rakethet is 100% opposed to women rabbis. On the other hand, Aaron Rakethet is 100% in favor of women being Hasidish Rabbeim, if they're on that level, spiritual level. So, the best example is the maid of Ludmir. She, Webermacher, Chayarachel Webermacher, received Tritlach. When she came in Aliyah to Yerushalayim, she was considered, it's written in the census, that she's a Chassidic Rebbe. She was recognized. Mukubalim met with her. Very fascinating individual. Again, there's not much that can be done because how many documents survive? It would be good for someone to do research. Probably there is research done on her. So in contemporary times in Israel, we've had a great achievement that came from it began in the Haredi world. It didn't begin in the Tzioni Dati world. But both worlds are joined together today. Rav Chaim Kenevsky's wife, Batsheva Kenevsky, Rav Yashiv's daughter, in the 70s already, was out preaching and speaking to women, and she received kvitlach, and men and women lined up. There are books about her that have come out now. Her daughter, her Rebbetzin Kaledevsky, Rav Chaim ordered her to take over his wife's position. But there are many, many others today, Yamim and Mizrahi, Noah Dayan, Breslov, I can't talk in detail, and Mima Mizrahi, and there are many more, and they are public speaking, and hundreds of women, Sivan Rahav, Mayor, over 500 people every Wednesday, Heichal Shlomo, the president already has gone. They sit there like she's on a level of Nechama Leibovitz. There's no two ways about it. She's a genius. She's I understand a bit of a Balat Shuvah. Others, the Breslover one that I mentioned, Noha Dayan, the stories are unbelievable, the impact they've had. But what's the difference? They're not rabbis. See, when you use the title rabbi, it means that the woman can do everything a rabbi can do. A woman cannot be involved with Eidut L'Kiyum Dava. This is a divine law. Eidut L'Bira Dava, we accept women 100%. But Kiyum Dava, Kedushin, when you need a Beit Din, Figeret, etc. And that's the problem with the title rabbi. that you imply she can do anything a man can do. But a woman who's a tzaddikit and you're inspired by her, beautiful. Miriam Hanaviah, right or wrong, Devorah HaShofetet, Bruria.
You get up in front of a congregation on Shabbos morning.
No, no, that, and they don't. These women, what's amazing is they brought back to women what belongs to women. What's one of the big events that happens in Israel? Hafreshet Challah. Hundreds of women together baking challah, being mafresh challah. Rebbetzin Kanyevsky started that. That's beautiful. What do they talk about? What are the three big mitzvot of women? Challah, nidah, hadlakat haneirat. Challah is kashrut, nidah is tarat mishpacha. Hadlakat neirat is Shabbat. That's the three foundations of Yiddishkeit. So, Baruch Hashem, who is greater? When I enter this building, I cry for Yomo, thinks he's studying in the Kollel. Yomo, there's no one teaching you today. All right, you have wonderful Rebbeim, worms like me. You know who taught in this Kollel? Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein. Nechama Leibovich. Oh, was that an experience. So you see, this answer, women rabbis? No. But what they call here Rabbaniyot, Kala Kavod. And you have in the Haredi world, in the Chadali world, it's amazing what has happened. And it's happened very quietly. In other words, it has caught on without any controversy whatsoever. That Ad Kedei Kach, that when Rebbetzin Batsheva died, Reb Chaim Kanyevsky has many daughters. I believe he has only one son and many daughters. He appointed one of the daughters. He said, you have the personality of Ima, you're to take over. So that's why my being opposed to women rabbis has nothing to do with other rabbi, the other rabbi. I can tell you, I've told the story 1,000 times. You heard it from me 100 times in class. The story that the Breslover, Noah Yaron, this Dayan, the story she tells, I mean, I read her book, Makima, I was crying like a baby, and even if I cry easily, but then I couldn't stop the tears. And you know the story she tells, that she and her husband, they were both very successful. She was a TV personality, she was a radio personality, Galei Tzahal, then TV, everyone knew her, wanted her autograph, and he wrote scripts. They were well off, had money, and it was bothering them. They're Jewish. What are they doing in Israel? Ah, let's get away. She writes that, let's get away, clear our heads, all this narishkeit that we're Jewish. So they overnight they arranged, we'll go to Amsterdam, go to Holland. So they went to Holland. They flew to Holland. And Holland, I've been to Holland. I've been to Amsterdam. There are Jews. They saw Jews. They saw Jews. Saw people with kippot, with black hats. Ah, this is not for us. We got to get away. So they went in and went to the train station and they said, where's the furthest part north, far away? This is December time. And they take the train. They go all the way north. They get off at the station and they ask the station master, where is there a little hotel near here? And he laughs at them. He says, people don't come here in the winter. It's too cold in the summer. But you're stuck. There's no train going back until tomorrow. He says, you know what? A block away, there is a little hotel. Maybe he'll give you a room. Let me check. He goes. He says, yeah. Comes back. He says, take care of the station for me. He comes back and says, yeah, the man said, give him an hour. He'll call someone to clean up, set it up for you. An hour later, the couple walks over. And the man greets them and says, let me check upstairs to see that it's okay, that the accommodations are ready. And what language were they speaking? They were speaking English, obviously. The man goes upstairs and they continue speaking to each other. They go into their native language, Hebrew. The man comes downstairs and he hears them speaking Hebrew. And he says, you're Jewish? And they say, we're Israelis. And he says, come into my office. And there's a Hanukkah candle, Hanukkah lights. It was Hanukkah. And they took that as a sign from God that they can't get away, that they are Jewish. And that was the start of their return. Well, when you hear a story like that, it's like going to mikveh. You're a different person. I heard from the Rav many times, Maria Rabbi Rav Soloveitchik. He raised the issue. We study so much Torah, you know. And look, if I would remember everything I studied, I'd be a good Rebbe. But what can I tell you? Believe me, I've studied a great deal. But you forget, you forget. So the Rav said, no. Torah is like mikveh. When you go to a mikveh, you dry yourself off afterwards. But the tahara remains. He says, Torah is like mikveh. You may forget, but the tahara, the kedusha that the Torah gave you, that remains. So a story like this, beautiful. Okay, now down. I want to thank Moshe Nis Esquire, who's a lawyer, YU graduate. So, Baruch Hashem, I have it right. If you recall, the last shiur we gave last week was a special on Yerushalayim, but the week before was a regular class. So if you recall, in the regular class, before we broke for the special, we spoke about davening if you missed Shacharit on Monday, Thursday. And you remember, you get off the plane, what the Menashe Klein describes, he wouldn't let them make a minyan. And I told you that in YU, the Rav, when he used to drive in on Mondays and couldn't catch it and had to leave Boston early, there was no minyan at the, they couldn't catch a minyan. So now you remember, like yesterday, following the shiur would end at 3 o'clock. Bacharim is da divas ab nishkehet kriyas ha'taira ha'in. Are there students reading kriyas ha'taira? I don't have to tell you, in YU in the 50s, we were not great tzaddikim, and many boys lived in the Bronx, Manhattan. They had to travel to yeshiva. They missed minyan. They davened biyachidut. So immediately a minyan would form. We'd go into the Beis Medrash, and we would read the Torah, mincha time. And the Rav held it was not a din in Shacharit. It was a din. You can't go 3 days without Torah. So it was a din in Monday and Thursday. And if it's still Monday daytime, you can read the Torah, excuse me. Okay. Emotionist writes to me, I live in Riverdale, and Davenet, you South Africans won't appreciate this fully, but Riverdale do it. I grew up... I grew up in the Bronx, and the Bronx had over 1 million Jews. Today, you can't walk in the Bronx. It's Sakonet Nefasha. The only good thing is when the Yankees play, they're still in their same location. So around Yankee Stadium, when there's a game, it's safe. Outside of that, wow. I live in Riverdale, but Riverdale is really part of the Bronx, but we never looked at it. The Bronx size, Riverdale is like a suburb, you follow. It's outside. So Riverdale is where all the Jews live today. I live in Riverdale, and Daven Rabbi Willich in Israel. And he's talking about when the Rav died. Now, the Rav died Friday, Chol HaMoed, Pesach. The funeral was Sunday. Sunday night was Yom Tov. So it was a real rush to get to Boston and get back. A few of us arranged, and the reason the funeral, he actually died, I think, Thursday night. But the reason the funeral was Sunday, so the Lichtensteins could get in. The family held up. A few of us arranged to accompany Rabbi Willich to Boston for the funeral. This meant catching an early flight because the funeral was early, given the fact that Yom Tov began that evening. Three of us, along with Rabbi Willich, had to daven Shacharis without a minyan in order to catch the flight. Upon our return to Riverdale in mid-afternoon, Rabbi Willich assembled the minyan and we read the Torah according to the Rav's psak, whose levaya we had just attended. So here is Eidut Ne'emanah to what I told you last week. Okay, good. Let me go a drop further and pick up with new material. Ottersville, I apologize. Federal Penitentiary, it's the real McCoy. There's a big difference in America. Again, it's an involved system. It's a federal government, and state. So if it's a local crime and it's only the state, state prisons are a little bit more liberal. Politicians have influence. You can bribe your way. But federal is very strict, very, very different. So here you have the question, Lo Aleinu, of... Excuse me?
There are in-house prisons.
But this is Ottersville. Well, Ottersville is white collar with a whole section for Haredim, believe it or not. It's very sad, but that's the reality. So here you have Ottersville, and the question, can you call a Levi, a guy who's, they're Haredim there, but there's no Levi. You have a Kohen, you have Yisraelim, but no Levi. And there are other Jews there, gangsters, whatever they're there for, don't know anything, Itreif, Mechalel Shabbos, but a guy pops up and says, he's a Levi. He's a Levi. A guy says he's a Levi. His mother told him he's a Levi. His grandmother told him he's a Levi. All right. Can you call him up? And the whole tshuva gets involved with, can you call someone who's not religious up to the Torah? And ultimately, the Mishnah Halacha, very sadly, says, yes, could be Tinoka Chinishbu. I quoted Reb Moshe to you. I showed you Reb Moshe and Mesoret Moshe. Reb Moshe also felt that you can call up Mechalelei Shabbos, Bisman Hazer. It's Tinoka Chinishbu. And Reb Moshe also deals with people in prison. It's unfortunately not a unique occurrence anymore. Okay, now I want to go one step further. Chelik Tetvav, Siman Mem Tet. And the guys in prison try to come up with an idea. In other words, these Haredim, they have good minds. They were having good to cup. You can imagine these were good Lamdanim who used their good minds for illicit monetary actions. So they come up with the following idea. They say, maybe on Shabbos we could find a bit of a solution. What would be a bit of a solution? That you call up the first seven. Let's assume that the Levi it doesn't fit in, but all the others are Haredim Afrum. Then you can make Hosafat, and the Hosafat you can give to the Mechalelei Shabbos. That's the idea they come up with. So Rabbi Menashe Klein is not overly impressed. If they're being called to the Torah on Shabbos, you can make Hosafet. It's still the same question. Can you call a Mechalel Shabbos? But on the weekdays, you don't have a solution. Why not? Aaron, why not? Because on the weekdays, you can only call three. Tircha de Tzibura. Now, I want to be a wise guy. I could say that when people are in jail, what's the Tichet de Tzibura? They're not doing much anyway. But Tichet de Tzibura, this is the Takana of Chazal. So what Rav Menashe Klein is telling them is when all is said and done, there's no solution. You're going to have to call up Mechalelei Shabbos and Bisman Hazeh, be somach on the concept of Tinokat Shinishbo. Fine. Now, in this tshuva, this is fascinating now. He gets involved in the question. He gets involved in the question. Who is worse, a boor or an amaretz? If you recall, when they're describing these people who aren't from in jail, they'd use the word boor, amaretz. It's a Mishnah Pirkei Avot, Perek Bet, Mishnah Hey, Ein Bur Yirei Chet, V'lo Am Ha'aretz Chasid. Ein Bur Yirei Chet, V'lo Am Ha'aretz Chasid. What does this mean? What's the difference between them? And here, Reb Menashe Klein gets involved, and this is one of the most fascinating sugyas. It's a sugya in Sota Daf Chaf Amid Aleph. And it's a very famous Mishnah, although most people don't zero in on the end of the Mishnah. This Mishnah is famous for the reason It deals with the whole problem of Kol Hamalamei that Bitu Torah Ki'ilu Linda Tiflet. And then this is the famous Mishnah. You see that I'll summarize the Mishnah. I don't want to get involved in the discussion. I've published on this, but it takes us hours. But the Mishnah is talking about when you teach a woman when she's growing up. So what are you going to teach her? You're going to teach her Parshat Sota because you want her to be a good woman. And you're going to teach her that there's trial by ordeal, right? You're all familiar. It's the only trial by ordeal in the Torah, the Memorarim. But what happens if this woman is guilty of sin and she drinks of the water and she's fine? Nothing happens. If that's the case, you can lose all your year at Shemayim. This is why the worst chinuch in the world, if you have a little kid, right? I raised my children, I raised my grandchildren today. I'm traveling to Haifa on Tuesday to raise my great-grandchildren. You tell a little kid, if you turn on a light in Shabbat, God will strike you. It's the worst thing you can do. The kid will turn on a light, then no one's going to strike him. You understand? It's the worst chinuch possible. There's a way to be mechanech, but that's not it. Now, so this woman walks away laughing, guilty of sin, Marilyn Monroe, and then nothing happened to her. I say you have to tell the woman chaschut tola that yes, sometimes a woman will sin, but she has many good points in her favor. She gave tzedakah, she helped old people, chaschut tola. And you look into the Mishnah, yesh zchut tola beit shanim, yesh zchut tola gimel shanim. And mikan omer ben azai, chayav adam v'lamedet bitol Torah, she'im tishter teida shehazchut tola la. And ben azai says, from here we see a person is obligated to teach his daughter Torah, so if she sins, she'll understand sometimes the main marim will not on the spot punish her. And then Rabbi Eliezer says, Chas v'chalila kol hamalamei bitol Torah ke'ilu lomda tiflut. That if you teach your daughter Torah, it's like teaching her lewdness, nefarious behavior. And the Rambam paskins la halacha, all the Rishonim paskin la halacha like Rabbi Eliezer. So this is a very famous Mishnah. I need not tell you it's been discussed many times. The simple pshat, the pshat in the Mishnah is very simple. That, and the Rashi alludes to it. If you look into Rashi, you'll see what I'm saying is basically Rashi's thinking and many other Rishonim, that what does it mean? In those days, women got married at 12, 12 and a half, 13. They had no time to learn. So all you're going to teach them is Parshat Sota? If that's all you teach them, they will be very tricky. They learn sin all you want. And Haschut Torah, that I'll do a good deed, I'll do a sin, and the next day, I'll bake bread for the poor. That's why Rebbe Eliezer was opposed. And this explains to you why the Rambam paskins lahalacha, that b'meh devarim amurim b'torah shebichtav, but Torah shebichtav you have to teach. And all the mefarshei haRambam have difficulty. Where did the Rambam get this from? I can go into much more detail. I don't have time now. Not for now. But, and this is why Zachinu Bizmanenu, that the Chafetz Chaim already in Likutei Halachat on Sotran, this very Mishnah, this very Sugya, he already said we have to teach women a lot more than just Torah Shabbat. Today women go to gymnasium. In our time already, when women go to university and have bachelors and masters and doctorates and every type of knowledge under the belt, and we have women in Israel doing research with their heads covered with not one hair showing, who will be candidates for a Nobel Prize with cancer, what women have discovered. One is a Rebbetzin, husband is a Rosh Yeshiva. Another woman was just big articles in the weekend newspapers. No? The Rav and the Lubavitcher Rebbe both said we have to teach women everything. They learn everything in general knowledge. They have to be steeped in Torah knowledge. All right, so that's the Mishnah. What's important to us is the end of the Mishnah. Who are your merits? If I'm Rabbi Yoshua. Chassid Shota, the Rasha Orum, the Isha Purusha, Umaka Purushin, Hare Elum Avalei Ha'olam. That they list out a whole number of people who are destroying the world. And among the people he mentions that are destroying the world, Rasha Orum, a cunning, evil person. All right? Cunning, evil person. Well, I got to tell you, if you go further with the Gemara, Daf Chafalo from it, Bet, you'll, the Gemara, try, you can work it out, it's a very fascinating Gemara. Gemara tries to understand, what do you mean a cunning, evil person? What do these words mean? And one example the Gemara gives, Amar Rav Huna, Zehamekil Liatzmo, Umachmir La'acherim. You follow? That a cunning, evil person is, you make it for yourself, you use an automatic elevator, Shabbos, and when anyone asks you, you say, Chas v'chalila, it's us, this problem, that problem. That's an evil person. You have the anecdote which says it all. Professor Louis Ginsberg at the seminary. No, you remember the story where this man asks him, you know, the Upper West Side, Manhattan, big buildings and elevators, and the man says, Professor Ginsberg, can I use the elevator on Shabbos? And Ginsberg says no. And a minute later, the guy sees Ginsberg goes into the elevator. So when he meets him again, he asks him, I don't understand. You told me you can't use it, and you use it. And Ginsberg answers, you asked me. I didn't ask any rabbi. All right, it's an anecdotal shaila. And I want to be malamed chud of Louis Ginsberg. Maybe there was an elevator man there. I mean, it's hard for me to believe. I don't want to believe that Louis Ginsberg pressed the buttons on Shabbos. But that's what the Gemara is saying here. This is a Rasha Arum. Ulama ze shekara v'shana v'lo shimesh talmidei chachamim. Oh boy, now you're hitting something. That what is a Rasha Arum? Someone who knows, he learned a great deal, but he never studied with talmidei chachamim. He went to the computer, he downloaded the Sansino translation, and he can study the Gemara with Sansino. He made a little money. You have to buy, right? The Schottenstein computer made a little money, bought the Schottenstein computer. What would I call it? The website? What would you call it? Help me out. What's the word? That you buy the right to enter that website. Right. If Yomo doesn't know the word, I don't know the word. He's my master. But I mean, there has to be, what do you call it? You need a, he got a little bit more money. He bought the Bar Ilan key, you understand? Oh boy, he never studied with a Rebbe in his life. This is a Rasha Arum, because Yiddishkeit is a living tradition.
Do we have examples of famous Rabbonim? Never had a Rebbe studied on their own.
And those Rabbanim that you'll give an example, they never entered into the mainstream. The classic example is the Rocket Shuffer, Rabbi Yosef Rosen. We don't paskin like him. You have to have a Rebbe. I'm sitting here because the Rebbe is sitting next to me. You understand? I'm sitting here because Rabbi Moshe is sitting over here. Remember what I told you with David Applebaum, Hashem Yikom Damo, when I asked him, David, you studied with Rabban Soloveitchik so many years. What do you get out of Rabbi Gusman? Netzach, Rabbi Gustman. I'm going to talk about him tomorrow. What do you get out of Rabbi Gustman? And I'll never forget David's answer. He says, Rabbi Aaron, he says to me, when you hear Rabbi Gustman's shiur, Rabbi Shimon Shkup is on one side, and Rabbi Chaim Moisik Grzynski on the other side. I said, you don't have to say another word. I mean, this is Yiddishkeit. Without a Rebbe, what you can come up with, Yiddishkeit becomes liberalism, Tikkun Olam, Chesed. I don't have to tell you what's going on today. Kids go to South America to help them. Jewish kids, why you have been involved too, to help in these communities. And it's Tikkun Olam, Tikkun Olam. Of course there's Tikkun Olam, but first there has to be Tikkun of your own Jews. Ani Yircha Kodem. I'm much happier with the YU missions that come to Israel and work in the underdeveloped areas. So, yes, Yomo, I love your smile.
Those programs in South America help CJF raise money for the...
Victor, me a favor, put on the air conditioning at 22. You know what you sound like just now? I understand what you're saying. I was very friendly with Bernie Lander. You know that. Our lives intertwined with Bernard Revel. So every year I would visit Bernie Lander. Whenever I was in America, we made an appointment. We sat together, laughed together, cried together. So Bernie always felt bad that, he went out and YU was what raised him. And in Touro, it's not exactly a YU concept. You have Touro, you have Land, you have all these schools. They're secular, so they're for Gentiles. So Bernie Lander said to me, you have to understand, Arnold, I raise money from the Goyim to support the yeshiva in the greater Touro picture. So that's what Yomo is saying. So we'll accept it, fine, okay. But remember, Yomo, HaKesef, if we are good people, loya netakol. You follow? We have to be a little bit above it. But all right, that's an open issue, and I'm the best example in the world because I ran away from any position in life that involved administration and fundraising. All I can do is learn, teach, write, and try to be mechadesh. Okay, but there's a very fascinating Gemara. So now the Gemara. This is the Gemara. Itma. Rabbi Eliezer, Hareza Amaretz. Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmoni Omer, Hareza Bua. And what does this mean? That he wasn't Mishamesh Talmidei Chachamim. So he's so bad you call him Amaretz. Others call him a boor, and this is the Gemara. What is the difference between them? What does this mean? And here's where he goes in, Menashe Klein, goes into a very fascinating description that Habur, Hureik, Ein Bo Lo Torah, Bo Lo Mitzvot, Bo Lo Derech Eretz, B'Midah Tovat, and a boy, he knows nothing. He's totally without any knowledge. He can never be a Yirei Chet because he doesn't know what Yiddishkeit is all about. But in Amaretz, he already knows a little bit. And he knows how to get along with people. And he's never going to be a great Lamdan, but he can be a bit of a Yirei Chet. He will never be a Chassid. To be a Chassid, you have to be knowledgeable. And I repeat, a boor, do you have the word in Chazal, a field that you can't work properly, that you can't irrigate, there's no water, you can't plant, the seeds will not take hold. A boor, it's a lost cause. And that's what Chazal mean when in Pirkei Avot, Ein bo yerechet. There's no anything. To be yerechet, you have to have knowledge. You have to know what you can do on Shabbos, what you can't do. He never had a Rebbe. He never was close. He never saw. He never lived Yiddishkeit. This is with Giyur. In Israel, they assign you to a family. Why did they assign you to a family? Because all the books in the world can't teach you how to keep Shabbat. But when you're with a family, Shabbat, it's a whole different experience. So a boor is a very low level. And Amaretz is someone, all right, he wasn't Mishamesh Tamidei Chachamim. But he learned a little bit. He knows Chumash. He knows Mishnah. He learned some Sinok. He learned Schattenstein. He learned Steinsaltz in English. He knows a little bit. But a chassid, he can never be. And this is his discussion here. What is really important? These gangsters that you have in jail, these criminals, these culprits, call them what you want. Some are boor, some are amei haaretz. Depends on their background. And you have to treat them tinokot shenishpa'u. I think the message that he's giving to the from Jews in jail, you have to set an example that, a living example, the Gemara that we just quoted, v'lo shimesh tamidei chachamim. You're now exposing these people to Yiddishkeit, to davening, to kashrut, to Shabbat for the first time. Go out of your way to have a positive influence. But very fascinating. I want to go one step further. And by the way, it is rumored. I can't swear to it, but I've seen it already in the newspapers. It is rumored that our former Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert, in jail, they say he doesn't miss a million, puts on tefillin. He's in the part of the jail where there's Sheyurim, where Katzab was in that part of the jail, where the chief rabbi is now giving a shir as I speak, Rabbi Lau, and they, excuse me? Not Rabbi Lau, excuse me, Rabbi, let's not even mention his name. I apologize to Rabbi Lau, the ex-chief rabbi, made chief rabbi, Rabbi Elyoshev. And Yomo, I know that hurts you that someone is criticizing the Haredi world, but that is a fact. And you better learn how to accept it. You understand? It doesn't make me anti-Haredi. It makes me a good Jew. There's a big difference in what I'm saying. Yeah, very much a good Jew. Wow. Did I suffer? I remember what went on. And nothing you could do. It takes me back to the early 80s with the kashrut, with the pigs, with the... let me not talk about it. I'll get sick. What can I do? I have only one value in life. Torah Tashem to me, I have no other value. Everything else is secondary. Okay, back here. Now, I'll show you something amazing that the Mishnah Halachas refers to, because he gets involved. In other words, you see, in this tshuva, this is where he's so different. Rav Menashe Klein is a warm Jew with a lot of Hasidus in him. He's not a Litvak. Rav Moshe is not going to get involved in stories. He's not going to get involved in discussions of frumkeit. Rav Moshe gives you a tshuva lahalacha. Rav Avadya Yosef it's tantalizing how much knowledge he has, encyclopedic. They say he beat the computer once on a question. They wanted to see who knew more, and he knew more than the Bar Ilan computer on a certain issue. I mean, it's unbelievable. But Rav Menashe Klein, he starts with Adasville, and he winds up with a whole discussion. Boor, Amaretz, what's the difference between them? Why a boor can't be a Yerechet? But an Amaretz knows a little bit already. I'm Haaretz, he says. He's with the people. He lives in the big world. But he can't be a Chassid, because he's not that knowledgeable. And we have to influence, now that they're in jail with you, see that you're a good influence. And at Seichel Dun, he refers you to the Chayayotim. Now, all of you know the Chayyadim, for Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, the Chayyadim was one of his big, big heroes. I'll never forget, in the mid-50s, were you at the Yahrzeit Shiur where the Rav began speaking about the grocer in Vilna? The Chayyadim had a grocery store in Vilna. And the Rav began, they're clean on it. How did he make a living? And a grocery store, and he's given a goinim sheba goinim. And he began with the chayyadim, a psak of the chayyadim, with Yalav Yavo, and the whole shia was based upon the grocery store in Vilna and the chayyadim. And you have to know, Rav Avram Danzig, the chayyadim, you have to know that the Rav, that's also a good speaking device. The Rav caught the audience. Whenever I'm speaking to an audience in the army, whatever, wherever I had to speak to an audience, it's not the classroom. It's an audience you don't know, and it may be a chad pami, a one-time show. You got to catch their attention. Because most people, don't really have an attention span. They're not really, they're there, all right, let's see. But the kumhaint of kumogin, it's not overwhelming to them. And if you catch them, you got to catch them right away. Understand? You tell a story. You raise an issue. The Rav caught the audience. The Rav caught the audience. So, Yitzchak, when we studied with Rabbi Joseph H. Lukstein, homiletics, remember? I remember little Joe, only he could speak that way. Rabbi Soloveitchik is a master. The way he told the story of the grocery store and went on to give a 2.5 hour halachic shiur on Yalav Yavo and the grocery store's psak in Chayyadim. So Rabbi Nasha Klein, Seichen Dun, refers you to the Chayyadim here. Now, the Chayyadim, Klal Kuf Mem Gimel Hilchat Yom Kippurim. In the standard edition of the Chayei Adam, it's page Tuf Pei Hei. Okay? And he says that it's amazing. You see, again, there's so much here. I want to say something else too. And you know, we feel it's part of life. Your Rebbe hacks away and says, you people, the way you live and the standards and everything is fallen and people are so bad and people are so horrible and people are mazalzel and mitzvah. Alright? That's what I heard from my rebbeim. They were Europeish and they looked at America. Oh my gosh, this is America. This is a disgrace. We were so fortunate the way we were raised 50 years ago, 100 years ago. I gotta tell you, every generation struggles. Not everyone, the majority of our people are boors and amei haaretz, and unfortunately it's basically always been that way, particularly in modern times. So the Chayyadim is describing, this is the early 1800s, Chayyadim is describing his generation, and he's pleading with the people, you have to learn, this is Hilchat Yom Kippur, he's trying to get you ready to be a real Baal Tshuva on Yom Kippur. You have to learn every day, Sifrei Hayira, a little, a lot, and this is more important than anything else you will learn. And he quotes the Pasuk, what does God ask of you? Hashem Elokecha mevakesh mecha kim liyirah oto, fear him. And in the Mishnah, im ein yirah ein Torah, ki, what good is Torah if you learn and you're not mekayim Torah, you don't live up to what's requested of you. And if there's no yirat Hashem, there is nothing to your religious life. And if this is the case, yoter tov kasher yadam yirei shamayim af shehu am haaretz, yoter veyoter tov meilamdan v'ein lo yirah. You hear what the Chayei Adam paskins? That it's better a person should be an am haaretz, but have yirat shamayim, then be a Lamdan who does not have Yirat Shemayim. And we can give many, many examples. Lo Aleinu, living in the state of Israel, living in modern times, I don't want to open my mouth. God have mercy. A Chassidish Jew committed suicide in Migrash HaRusim on Friday. You're aware of it or not? Migrash HaRusim, the Russian compound, the center of the city, where they, the first place where they arrest you. And God have mercy, a Jew, when they describe black clothes, everything. If you don't know, you don't hear news, you don't read newspapers, was the first item on the news most of Friday. Enough bias in a yeshiva. What the man was doing, and he's not the only one, and there's case after case after case. Where are we at? What good is learning? What good is knowledge? If there's no Yirat Shamayim. Wow. You be an Amaretz, but at least be a Yirat Shamayim. And he quotes the Pasuk, Mishle, Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Chaftalid, Tov Rash Holech Betumo, Me'ikesh Svatav, Fohuksil. Translation, better is the poor man who walks in his integrity than he that is perverse in his lips and is a fool. And the Chayadim interprets it, the poor man, you don't have Torah, but at least you're not a Lamdan. You don't know Shas and Paskim. You can't give a shir on Avkad Kedushin for a full year, but you're Yirei Shemayim. But someone who's a lamdin, but a phony, a faker, a machalal shem shamayim, which is better? Which is better? And living in Israel and in America too, the problems we see today, Torah figures so-called, Ribbono Shel Olam, where are we at? And this is what the Chayei Adam says. L'chein, klal al shadavah. What I want to say is when you learn Torah, only if you make up your mind to fulfill what you learn. Az tiyeh Torah retzuya. And but if you don't want to fulfill, what good is your learning? And here's the famous part of the vidui that affects almost all of us. I'll show you why. This is the source. He goes, he says, this is why in Yom Kippur, it's very important you should understand the confession. What are we saying? People, daven abdo, ashamnu, bagadnu, gazalnu, bibanu, dofi. What are we saying? What is it about? And here he explains. And you know, with the confession, I've often, first of all, it's a very basic question. With all the al-chaits, whoever thinks of so many different sins? I remember I had a Rebbe, Ruchem Gerelik. You've all heard his name. I keep him alive in the classroom. Rebbe Ruchem, a Radna, a Briska, a wild individual, a Lamdin, but a Vilda, that would be Rebbe Ruchem. He was a fascinating individual. So he once, jumping at the class, he says, I'll say it in English, but I'm living it in Yiddish. He says, all you guys are interested, you would like a matzah with pictures of all the sins. You follow? But there's a serious question. Who ever thought of all these sins? So first of all, the Goyim already say this. We all say the vidui not to embarrass someone who has to say it. In other words, it's true. 90% of the sins I never thought about. But there may be people in the Kehillah who did some of these sins. So we all say it together, not to embarrass anyone. The Chayadim says, why did they use these words, Ashabnu, Bagadnu? Why these words, he says? Because generally speaking, these are popular words for a sinner. These are the words you use, I sin, Bagadnu, Gazalnu, Dibanu Dolfi, but you have to go much, much deeper, he says. For every word you say, add on all the sins you really did. And For instance, Ashamnu, Achalti Devarim Hasurim, Nevedetu Trefet, Shkatsim Uramashim. Do any of you ever see the OU gives out Torah tidbits? You have the whole vidui, and for every word, many, many more sins that fall into Aleph, Bet, Gimel. He gives many examples here. Dibanu dofi, dibanu echad bepeh, echad belev, dibanu devarim betelim, lashon hara, shkarim, divrei mirma, chanifot, nivul peh, divrei maso, matan b'shabbat v'yom tov. All right. And that, in dibanu dofi, if we add on a few more dalits, boy, we come up with sins that all of us are victim to. And he gives a whole list. You see how many? A page and a half of small print what you should say during the vidui. And that's what they call the vidui of the Chaye Adam. He says something else too that's very important. Why is it arranged? Ashavnu, Bakanu, Gazanu, Libanu, Dofi, Asher, Aleph Bet. Why is doing something with the Aleph Bet so important? And you see, there's a symbolism here. We're only humans. We're limited in what we can say, what we can do, what we can regret, what we can recall. But by doing the Aleph Bet, you're saying it's all aspects of life, from Aleph Ad Taf. It's a very important concept. The Rebbe always would speak about this. Wherever you would find an Aleph Bet in davening, and Ashrei Yoshvei is a prime example, it is indicative of the human being that my whole, so much praise I want to give, I'm limited, but at least let me do from Aleph Ad Taf. It symbolizes my desire to do the best I can to include everything. And here he's using it in reverse, that when we're dealing with sin, we know we falter, we can't always recall everything, and we're only humans, we're only mortals. But Ashanu Baganu, we go through the whole alphabet. Very powerful part of the Chaye Adam that has influence on us until today. I still remember my first year in BMT, when I davened with BMT. I started teaching here in 1969. But Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, I think the first minyan we had was in 1970. So I remember Rabbi Horowitz mimeographed the vidui of the Chaye Adam. And I remember it was very powerful to see, and you would think and see, wow, I did this, I did this. This already is the Al-Chetz come to life when it's more personalized in the fashion of the Chaye Adam. All right, so a very interesting tshuva, Adisville, Federal Penitentiary, Reb Moshe Feinstein, the Minyan, the Levi, the Mechallelei Shabbos, Tinokot Shenishbu, the Boor, the Amorites, what is their status, which is better, and halacha lemaisam, ein hachinami, much better to be an Amorites who is observant than a Talmud Chacham who is a disgrace. You know, in life, you can't imagine what I've seen already. I told you this, I'll tell it to you again in context now. Maybe I said it last year, 2 years ago, but Friday morning, I was desperate to take a haircut. I looked so horrible. And yet I don't want to waste time waiting online. So I left Chris and I started out for the Shuk. And I figured in the Shuk, I'll look at the barber. There's a barber there and see how crowded he is at other things I would do in the Shuk. But as the bus passed the barber on Rehov Yushishkin, I peeked out and I saw he's open, and it was like 8 o'clock, 8:15, 8:20. And there are just three people there. I jumped out of the bus, jumped across the street. All right, I had to wait, but by 9 o'clock, I was out, and I looked like a human being again. I apologize to the people here with beards. I understand that the beard is the glory of a Jew, and the majority of the class is sitting with beards. But I grew up with the Rav, and what can I tell you? A different era. When I don't shave, it's mamish. It's sakonet nefashet for me, plain and simple. I'll never... you remember, were you there when Eric Zimmer asked the Rav, mid-50s? He says, Rebbe, can I shave on Cholamayid? And the Rav looks at him and he says, Eric, do you shave every day? What is your practice? And he says, yeah, Rebbe, I shave every day. So what's your question? You're not available in Cholamayid? Remember, the Rav barked at him, Tshuva Reb Moshe, it goes back to the Nodah B'Yehuda. A lot has been said on that topic. So, one time I'm walking up the hill with my dear friend, Rabbi Dr. Professor Tzvi Groner, Zichrono Levracha. It was Amish, Erev Yom Kippur, or a few days before Yom Kippur, and we're going into the barber. There's a barber up the hill. I don't think he's there anymore. Chovasim. And a guy is walking out of the barber shop without a yarmulke, nothing. And Tzvi greets him. They embrace, and they're fine. The guy walks on, and Tzvi says to me, "You know who that was?" I say, "No." He says, "One of my teachers, that's Professor Zussman." Zussman? I say, "He's supposed to know all of Bavli Yerushalmi by heart." Absolutely. Knows it by heart, clear. An enigma of the Chatam Sofer. And after I absorb who that was, and so he says, and I don't believe he fasts on Yom Kippur. Okay? Got it? So, this is an example. Is it better to be an Amoritz who is observant, or a Gon who threw it all away? Gentlemen, we have arrived. This is one of the most fascinating tshuvot you will ever encounter. It's life before your eyes. Life before your eyes. One of the few times where not only do I know the person who asked the question, but I made him world famous. In order to appreciate who he is, the question, let me read to you. What do we have there? Well, I have a gift for you. I have two copies.
Thank you.
I want to read to you from one of the classic works of all time, without the Shakespeare. From Washington to Washington. And I want to read to you, go to page 180. And the story is very simple. At the edge of Newark, remember, we're going back to 1962. At the edge of Newark, in the Wellsburg section, there was a tremendous housing development, you can't believe how big it was. And in this housing development, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of apartments. Rental was cheap. In one of the basements, every building had one basement. A basement had a meeting hall. Another basement had a social hall. Another basement had a sports hall. And one basement, they turned into a shul. And without going into a long history, the first two rabbis of the shul were YU graduates. And most of the people were Mechallel Shabbos, but they wanted an Orthodox shul, and there were some Shomrei Shabbos. Now it came time to look for the third rabbi. And YU rabbi wanted, YU said, the minimum $8,000 a year. Somehow they got in touch with a Chabadnik, and he was willing to take the shtala for, let's say, $5,000. So the Balabatim interviewed him. He wasn't married yet. And made a nice impression. All right, a little bit too frum looking. But when you consider you save $3,000, they hire him. Then this guy got married. His name, Shmuel Pesach Bogumilsky. He was called to the Torah Harav Shmuel Pesach, Ben Harav Shmuel Pesach. That's very important. His father died before he was born. You'll see why it's important in a minute. And at his wedding, the Balabatim fainted. Because when he was interviewed, I don't know how you do it, but you have a big beard, you comb the beard up, it's half the size. At the wedding, a full Chabad beard with a bekesha, the works. And these Balabatim Mekach Ta'ut, they wanted to get rid of him. And he went to the Rebbe. Every syllable is true. Went to the Rebbe in 1962, and he cried to the Rebbe, and they want to kick him out. The Rebbe said, "Du wirst bleiben, you stay there, you will remain, and you will succeed." That was approximately, let's say he got married, I came 62, this has to be 64. He is still rabbi of that shul, 2017. Yomo, you Litvak, how do you explain that? Not now. Now, we became very friendly. And we not only became friendly, we worked together. I never argued with anyone. I argued my first rabbi, that was my last machlokes. Since then, I've never had my fight. People don't like what I say, fine, I can't help it, I feel that way. But we're friends, that's it. I never say kiblu et dati. No one has a monopoly on truth. I try my best to be who I am, and I look to see if the Rav is smiling at me. So we worked together, hand in hand. We ran a joint education program. Wow. And beginning on paragraph 3, my close cooperation with Mount Sinai continued with its new spiritual leader. I learned a great deal about the Hasidic lifestyle by observing Shmuel Pesach and his wife Yehudis. On Saturday morning, I had to consult with him in advance of an announcement I was to make at the conclusion of the services. I walked over to the Bogomilsky's bright and early before the start of the 9 a.m. Shachrit davening at Beth Ephraim. I chanced upon my colleague heartily enjoying a cup of coffee and his wife's blueberry pie. When I asked, "How could one eat before the morning prayers?" Shmuel Pesach responded, "The difference between the Hasidim and the Misnagdim is very simple. You pray to eat. We eat to pray." So he started to teach me things. Now, Shmuel Pesach, Reb Shmuel Pesach, let me explain it. His father was a Litvisha, a survivor. His mother married a Litvisha. He was born after his father died. His mother remarried. The second marriage, she married a Chabadnik. And all the kids from Litvisha stock were raised by the second father. And they were raised in Chabad. And without exception, they all became die-in-the-wool Chabadnikim. Now, listen to this story. This will tell you what a Chabadnik is. On another occasion, we were together socially on a Saturday night. Yehudis, Shmuel Pesach, Malt and I spent a pleasant evening away from our formal public rabbinic posture. Rabbi Altman, you should know what that means. A Rav can't be friends with his balabatim. There's always that divide. But your friends have to be the other rabbis. We had plenty of rabbis. Rabbi Gordon was in the neighborhood. Rabbi Kalbach was in the neighborhood. I had plenty of good friends. But my closest friend, the same age basically, Shmuel Pesach and Yehudis, we were close friends, spent a fabulous Saturday. I was young, I could stay up to 1-2 in the morning. The next day I had to consult with my colleague. I called and Yehudis informed me he was in Puerto Rico. I was flabbergasted. We had just spent a good part of the night together. There was no mention of any travel the next day. You heard this explained, that they had gone to sleep at 2 a.m. At 5 a.m., the phone rang. It was the secretariat of the Lubavitcher Rebbe on the line. Could have very well been Leibel Groner, my dear friend Zvi Groner's uncle. A delegation was scheduled to leave for Puerto Rico that Sunday morning. One of the emissaries had taken ill. The Rebbe suggested that perhaps Shmuel Pesach could take his place and help strengthen Torah observance in Puerto Rico. Within minutes, the rabbi of Mount Sinai was on his way to the airport. At that moment, I truly comprehended the relationship between a Rebbe and his chassid. Gentlemen, that is an absolute true story. Could you imagine? You go to sleep at 2 o'clock. 3 hours later, the Rebbe's, one of his maskirim is on the line. Shmuel Pesach, and he tells him the problem. The Rebbe said you should go. Within minutes, he's awake. Negelwasser, out the door, at the airport. Pick up the ticket, join your colleagues. Go to Puerto Rico. I believe, if my memory is good, when he got back, he told me their main task was to build the mikveh. They were going to build the mikveh in San Juan, if I'm pronouncing it right. And this was Shmuel Pesach. How does the center respond to literature? A similar story. Chelik Hey. I just want to be sure it's not Chelik Chet. Let me just see another. The print here is. Let me take off my glasses. I have a problem whether it touches or doesn't touch. Yomo, check it out. I'll say it's Chelik Hey, Siman Lamed Daled. If it's not there, check Chelik Chet. Mishnah Halachat, okay? You want to check it now? Okay, go check it now. I think it's Chelik Hey, Siman Lamed Daled. But if I'm wrong, it's Chelik Chet. Okay? I Shuva written, 1962, Brooklyn. Who is it written to? Kvod harav hagon v'chulu v'chulu osek betzachei tzibur malatu kavodo harav Shmuel Pesach Bogomilsky Shlita Shadar Meilabavich. You know what Shadar stands for? Shliach de Rabbanan. It's a rabbinic term in modern usage. It's already being used in the 1800s, the 1900s, Shada, Shliach the Rabbanan. Generally, it means there's a whole two, I believe, Avram Meyari, there's a classic, I believe it's two volumes, maybe they published it in one volume. Shluchei Eretz Yisrael, the Chida, many people who lived in Israel. Israel is not like today. Today we are a wealthy, wealthy state. You all know what's happened here. Which volume is it in? Wow, you are quick. What do we have there? Which volume is that?
It's Chet.
Chet. And what do we say? Lamed Daled? No, it's Lamed Hey. Okay. Check that it's there. That's Hey. Lamed Daled. Let's see. One second. Lamed Daled, yeah, go back. Here it is. Yeah, there it is. It's Hey, I was correct. Hey, Lamed Daled. So, Shada Milabavitch, Shishlich Rabbanan, it's people who go to raise funds for the state of Israel, let me say for yeshivat in Israel, for the Diskin Orphanage. All the people that traveled all over the world were called Shadarim. Shliach the Rabbanan. And there's a tremendous a collection, Avram Ya'ari, it's beautiful scholarship, a history of various people who traveled all over the world raising funds for institutions in Eretz Yisrael. But he's referring to him as a Shaddah, as a Shliach the Rabbanan of Lubavitch. What we use today, a more technical term, a Shaluach. Shaluach, Shlucha. If you want to use a more rabbinic term, Shaddah. Shliach the Rabbanan. Shliach the Rebbe. For Lubavitch, it would be Shliach the Rebbe.
In Yiddish, you call him a Shulach.
A Meshulach in Yiddish is, but Meshulach has a concept, it's a put-down. When you say Meshulach, you mean it's, you get the feeling he's a schnorrer. And here, Shaddah, going to Puerto Rico, going to where he's going here, you'll see in a minute, wow, what Mesirat Nefesh. 5 o'clock in the morning, he's at the airport. Okay, and unfortunately, we don't have the question spelled out. Meaning, halavai, we could see the question, because Rav Menashe Klein says your question that you asked me and all the sources you have given, I see you are a big Talmud Chacham, and I understand your question, and then he gets into the nitty-gritty. And he says, essentially, you're telling me you were a Shaddah, Mikvod Kedushato Admur Hagon Hakadosh Admur Milubavitch. And the last summer, you had to go to Barbados, to the islands. What are they, in the Caribbean, these islands? I believe so. And in this, the word he uses, in this place off the mainstream, Afavafana Platz, there are 15 Jewish families there. And while you were there, you were able to circumcise 18 children, Jewish children, who had not been circumcised. The Ashrei Lo Shezacha Lizakot HaRabim. Wow, I envy you that you could be Mezakeh the Rabbim and 18 children circumcised. Nimolim. V'achshav nafsho b'sheilato. Your heart is in your question. Your soul is in your question. It's like you're hoping you can work out an answer. They have no Baal Korah there. Just one man whose eyes are poor. Ish echad, chole einayim, lo aleinu, v'kashelo likrot mitoch ha-sefer Torah, kol ha-sidra. Could you imagine? No Baal Korah? One old man who evidently knows how to lay in, his eyes are bad, doesn't have the energy, the strength, the ability to read the entire Parsha. And even when they read the Torah, the only time they read it, evidently the only time they have a minyan, when they have a bar mitzvah or on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Wow. What did this man do? And you can see he's on Haaretz, using the term we just spoke about in the previous tshuva. Ulefisha bal korei hanal kashelo likrot. Since difficulty reading, he introduced that when they have a minyan, they take out a Torah, put it down on the shulchan, on the table. It's not clear from what you're asking me whether they open the Torah, don't open the Torah, whether they keep it closed. I would imagine they keep it closed. I'm saying that. I would imagine from the description they keep it closed. The Al HaSefer Torah Meniach Lo Chumash. They put a Chumash on the Sefer Torah. Yitzchak, even in the army, you never had to resort to this, right or wrong. For Olele Torah, Minashek HaSefer Torah, Umabarech Birchat HaTorah Lefanecha. V'ha-korei, korei lo mitoch ha-chumish v'lo mitoch ha-sefer Torah. V'ha-kach mabarech ha-charecha ha-kol b'shem u'malchot. What a description. What a description. I don't know if this is one of a kind. I can't imagine this has ever happened anywhere with an Orthodox shul. And you see they're caught between two worlds. The world of their youth tradition, they take out the Torah. They kiss the Torah. They have reverence for the Torah. And they put the Chumash on top of the Torah. And he reads from the Chumash. And they make a bracha before and a bracha afterwards. And this is what Shmuel Pesach Bogunovsky saw. And he wants to see if he can come up with a solution. Bezrat Hashem, 2 weeks from now, we will try to see what the solution was and if it works. The question here is fascinating. The description is fascinating. And the players, knowing Rabbi Bogomilsky, just think for a minute the Mesirat Nefesh, Afavofen Aplatz, the end of the world, Barbados, Puerto Rico, the Rebbe sends, you do. 18 kids, Arelim, became Mulim, Kalakavod, Nimogim. Wow. This is Chabad. You notice his reverence both for the Skliyot of Rabbi Bogomilsky and the way he refers to the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He was, I cannot say a chassid of the Rebbe, but in a certain degree, he was a tremendous devotee of the Rebbe, Reb Menashe Klein. Okay, to reiterate.
There's no class next Sunday night?
No classes next Sunday. Monday, Mr. Trump will be here. And if
and here Sunday, isn't
it? The city is being closed down from 10 a.m. Sunday. That's what the police told me.
10 a.m. Sunday morning?
Correct.
You
say that, but the police have, no one has released the exact timetable, but I can't take detention there. People won't be able to get here.
Right, change it to Monday, because Shabbos, they might
right. No, halavai, halavai.
Sunday is going to be the coast.
They say from 10 a.m. till 10 to 8 p.m. Tuesday night, the whole center of the
locked
city
down.
Is going to be locked down.
What about going to Tel Aviv?
I don't know. I imagine you can. From what I gather, my son-in-law tells me that they're going to fly him in by helicopter to Yerushalayim. Probably land him at the Knesset.
There's a huge Yom Yerushalayim program Monday night at Binyan
Problem. I don't know how they're going to get there, my friend. My dear student, my dear Michael, forget it.
He thinks we're a fortune.
I can't answer. But I can only tell you that tomorrow I give shiur, terrific material tomorrow. Michael. And Tuesday, bright and early, I leave for Haifa. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, to visit my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren there. So Malka and I are dancing with joy because we were debating whether to go this week or next week. Imagine that we picked next week with all the balagan here. So Baruch Hashem.
Sunday in Tel Aviv for a meeting.
You should be able to get the, I don't know. The police will not reveal anything. They say security. They don't know themselves. You understand? But if you live near the King David Hotel, you got to notice.
What about we're living where we live?
I don't know. I can't answer you. I can't answer. Can't answer. You're not going to. We don't even know if he's going to Yad Vashem. There are rumors this way, that way, but there's tremendous security factors. You can't. Anyone who lives near the King David, his car has to be off the street by Sunday 10 a.m. or it's towed away.
10 a.m.
Sunday, 10 a.m. I'm telling you. That's, okay, but okay. So I have to tell Simon tomorrow that there's no class next week. Now, the Sunday, Monday afterwards are the final classes of the year, of this year. And the change for next year is the Sunday class. This class will be Sunday morning. That's for health. I have much more energy in the morning. And, you know, I'm not a youngster. And Be'ezrat Hashem, I want to keep going. I have a lot I have to give you. The Rebbeinu Shloim, I can tell you, Reb Aaron Cutler, who was Masada Kedushin here, 54. So Reb Aaron's first trip to Israel, Reb Yisrael Meltzer had died. He now became the titular head of Eitz Chaim. I write about it in Washington. I think I write this too, what I'm about to tell you. And while he's being Masada Kedushin, the Jordanians started shooting. Two people were killed. It was right near where Mir Yeshiva is today, right near Mir, right there, right near where the Jordanian border was. And Reb Aaron fell under the table, and Reb Aaron started davening, Ribbono shel Olam, ichtafnach lerenin, lozmir lebin, ichtafnach lerenin. I have to learn yet. Let me live. So we heard about this in Lakewood, and we were astounded. The Mashkiach, Reb Nosson Vachfel, the Alta Mashkiach, then young Mashkiach, he said, I'm saying it in English, but I'm saying it in Yiddish, thinking it in Yiddish, he said, take a look, Reb Aaron Cutler, the Gadol Hador. Who is bigger than him as a Rosh Yeshiva? The great Mechadesh. And what is he saying to the Ribbono Shel Olam? Ichtaf noch lernen. I still have what to learn. Now you should know that I told the story in Chicago many decades later, and people ran over to me, crying, hugging me, kissing me. They were there when this happened. One of them was the caterer, who then became a caterer in Chicago, and he couldn't believe I knew. He was an ear witness, and I an ear witness. How did you know the story? I said I was learning in Lakewood at the time, and the story reached us right away. So I want to say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I don't want to be boastful enough to say Ichtaf noch lernen, but I have a lot I want to give over to the coming generations.
When is 9 o'clock, 9:15?
9 o'clock in the morning. 9:05, it could be if David Miller says, and I don't know if he says Sunday morning. It'll be 9, I will say 9 o'clock. Okay, so I want to so first of all, I want to thank everyone for coming. We, Baruch Hashem, we doubled the size of the previous class. And when I left today, I said to my wife, I'll be happy if I'll have a mezuman. But considering that I have to call off class next week, I'm happy I taught today. So what did we do? Today we finished up. I'll tell you, that Chayyadim is so fascinating. And the question of what's more important, what is a boor and what is an amaretz, and which is it better to be, the Gemara and Saita, Chacham Arum, but Talmud Chacham Arum, and unfortunately we see too much of that. And it's all Adasville. How do you treat, how do you relate to these people? And I think there's a message there that maybe in jail, all right, you can make people firm in jail too. Not just the rabbi coming in and preaching, but you're in jail, you did something wrong, all right, a white-collar crime, a money crime. All of us, the Gemara says, there isn't a Jew who's innocent of Avak Gezel, right or wrong. So, all right, but being a good example. And if what we hear about Omer is true, there's a fabulous example of someone in jail and he's gone back to his youth. He came from a traditional home. When I came in Aliyah, he was a politician and everyone told me he went to Shul Shabbos. So halavai, halavai. Then we spoke about Rav Shmuel Pesach Bogomilsky, and we're beginning a fascinating shuvah of what's going on in the Baba Habil.
Wasn't that the middle name of the professor of Jewish history at Hawaii?
No, his name is Bogomilsky, and that was his mother's maiden name, I'm told. Hyman B. Greenstein.
Right.
Hyman Bogomilsky. Now you're confusing me. This is Bogomilsky too. Yeah, maybe. Wait, am I right? Maybe that's the name. I don't know. I have to check it out. Let me look at his.
Check it out.
I have his book. I'll check
it
out. Take a look and see if they tell you what the B stands for. Okay, now.
Wikipedia.
You got it. Okay, Yitzchak, this is yours, Rav Asher Weiss. Yeshivat Hesde Gavoa Rishon LeZion, some very fascinating articles, Aaron, take it, and maybe one day you'll learn in that yeshiva. This is interesting. I kept a copy for myself for my files. This is about this, I write about it in Revel. In 1908, there was a strike of students in Yeshiva Shulchan. They wanted a high school program. And the yeshiva almost split. We spoke about it when we dealt with yeshiva. Anyway, they found new documents, and an article just came out by Eli Genauer, who I happen to know, a very fine individual in Seattle. He put that article came out based upon the new documents that were found. And here's the most important freebie of all, an inside look into sexual orientation conversion therapy. Could you imagine people have filed a suit against this Israeli American who is a psychologist and helps people who are, you know, problems with homosexuality, lesbianism, helps them become what's called straight. And he's had success, and I've seen success with my own students, and today this may be criminal behavior. God have mercy where the world has gone to. This is from the New York Times, an obituary, Julius Youngner, who is one of the polio vaccine pioneers working with Sabin. And it's an interesting article, Salk, working with Salk and Dr. Salk, you know, two people invented the vaccine at the same time, Sabin and Salk, both Jewish. And here's a Jewish boy, very fascinating life story, nothing about his being religious or not religious, but he never got the credit he deserved. See, that's also interesting. Sometimes when these teams work together, the head honcho gets all the credit and everyone else is left out. And interesting. Very, the New York Times has it right. And Be'ezrat Hashem, we will meet again tomorrow morning at 9:05 in health and happiness. Das Vedanya.